This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents When You Knew by Jamie Beck, performed by Siri Scott. This above all, to thine own self be true. William Shakespeare. Chapter 1. Colic. According to Merriam-Webster, a condition marked by recurrent episodes of prolonged and uncontrollable crying and irritability in an otherwise healthy infant that is of unknown cause and usually subsides after 3 to 4 months of age. According to me, karmic payback for reneging on my offer to let Hunter and Sarah adopt my baby. Colt had been screaming all evening, as usual. Colic, they said, although labeling it did nothing at all to help Gentry's infant son or her to live with the never-ending fussing. No amount of soothing, bouncing, rocking, or walking quieted him if his eyes were open. Alone, and on the verge of a nervous breakdown, Gentry questioned her sanity. Her thoughts slid like quicksilver, fueling the stress headache pulsating behind her eyes. Her son's screeching response to the doorbell, which echoed off the vaulted ceiling and plate glass windows, didn't help. With her unhappy child bristling in her arms, Gentry raced across the living room, sidestepping a growing stack of unread parenting magazines, to reach the door before the visitor rang again. If she'd actually succeeded in getting Colt to sleep this evening, she might have shot the fool on the other side of her door for having risked waking him. In fact, she might shoot him anyway, just because it had been that kind of day and her frustration needed a target. She flung her door open, baby pressed to her chest, and gawked at her half-brother, Hunter. "You?" Hunter and his wife, Sarah, stood there against the backdrop of a dusky summer sunset. Wide eyes and slack jaws contrasted with their elegant Saturday night attire. Were they stunned by her impolite greeting or by her shabby appearance? Probably both, she conceded. Seconds ticked by before Hunter found his voice.
"You're alive."
"Depends on your definition." Gentry retreated into the house, knowing they'd follow, even though she hadn't invited them to visit. She couldn't shoo them away, but she didn't want them to see her strung out, either. Expecting Gentry to fail was something of a Cabot family tradition. For most of her life, she'd been happy to live down to their expectations. In rare moments of self-honesty, she could admit that, at times, she'd even turned it into a game. An immature dynamic, for sure, but one that hurt less than being ignored or than trying and failing. She didn't, however, want to be seen as a failure of a mother. Especially not by them. Colton was the only perfect, innocent, precious thing she'd ever produced in her entire life. She didn't regret her decision to keep him, but unlike Sarah, she had no idea how to be a mom, let alone be a good one. Hadn't exactly had a great role model. But for his sake, she now had to build bridges with her family, instead of burning them down. "We just left a certain tea." Sarah held up a to-go bag that smelled like curried seafood. Her signature smile returned, which complemented her simple summer sheath and shiny hair. Confronted by that glamour, Gentry smoothed the loose hairs that had pulled free from her ponytail, scarcely able to recall the last time she had looked as sharp. No one has seen or heard from you in almost 3 days. We thought we'd check in on our way home and drop off some food. Hunter and Sarah lived about a half mile up the road. Their proximity had been one of the reasons Gentry had purchased this unit. Its oversized deck and lake views didn't hurt either. The only flaw was the cliff of a backyard, which descended more than 100 feet to Lake Sandy. Not the best play space, but that view. She'd figured that the flat front yard and neighborhood park would suffice. Sarah set the takeout bag on the entry table, her gaze honing in on Colt. Gentry almost wished her sister-in-law had held a grudge against her for keeping Colt, because Sarah's graciousness inflicted far worse guilt. The look of love she now gave Colt only made it harder. "Thanks," Gentry's stomach gurgled at the whiff of real food. Getting to the grocery store had become harder than climbing Mount Everest, so she'd been making do with Ritz crackers, oatmeal, and eggs, a fact underscored by the empty red and yellow box tipped over on the coffee table. Hunter stood, legs apart, hands on his hips. His owlish gaze roamed the living room, taking inventory of the remnants of what had once been a lovely contemporary condominium. Baby blankets lay strewn on several surfaces, including over the outrageously pricey Rochebubois sofa cushions, now tipped askew. Two half-empty baby bottles sat on various tabletops, sans coasters, and brightly colored baby play gyms, bouncy seats, and other necessities ate up the majority of the floor space. The pièce de résistance? The hideous white plastic sculpture, otherwise known as the diaper genie, looming in one corner. The look on Hunter's face confirmed what Gentry already guessed. His house never looked ravaged by a monsoon, despite his hectic life with their foster son, Ty.
What the hell happened?
Nothing. Gentry rhythmically jostled Colt, brushing quackers, her ancient, love-worn beanie baby duck, against his arm. Her son fussed, heedless of her wish that he'd stop long enough to convince Hunter and Sarah that she knew what she was doing. Colt's tiny head bobbled against her collarbone. She tucked her nose against his cheek to smell his sweet skin and then looked into those inky blue eyes, the color of a moonless night sky, and swore she'd do right by him. Somehow she'd learn, on her own, to be what he needed and give him everything he deserved. Someday, as soon as his constant crying ended and her mental fog lifted, then she'd finally be able to experience the bliss reflected in most other young mothers' faces. Tonight, however, there'd be no bliss. Right now, she'd settle for 30 minutes of peace and quiet. Hunter winced as she touched quackers to Colt's nose, showing no recognition of the plush toy he'd given her for her 5th birthday. When he'd bought it for her with his own money all those years ago, she'd believed, for the first time, that he might love her like he did Colby. Growing up alone, she'd envied her siblings' closeness. Every time they'd gone home to their mother, Gentry had to run to her room to cuddle her surrogate, Quackers, which explained his worn condition. Sarah reached both hands toward Colt, soft smile on display. "Can I hold the little pumpkin while you eat?"
"And shower," Hunter muttered, earning himself a sharp look of disapproval from Sarah. He raised his hands in surrender. Hunter and Sarah probably thought they'd make better parents for Colt than Gentry did. As much as she wanted to prove them wrong, right now, she wanted that curry shrimp more.
Sure.
Gentry handed her son to Sarah, whose entire face lit up with adoration. Would there come a day when wondering if Sarah coveted him a bit would no longer be Gentry's first thought? It wasn't charitable or fair of her, considering how quickly her sister-in-law had forgiven her. Forcing her uneasiness aside, Gentry received the to-go bag from the entry table. Anything from their sister, Colby's, restaurant qualified as the best food in the greater Portland area. Colby's boyfriend, Alec, was a certain T's chef and had spent years training in Mougins, France. Gentry practically skipped to the kitchen, clutching the bag with greedy hands. Her brother followed her and waited while she reheated the food in the microwave, the one appliance her mother had taught her how to use. Gentry, he waved his hand up and down, obviously unimpressed by her formula-stained robe, Ugg slippers, and ponytail. Are you okay? You seem a little overwhelmed. You caught me at a bad moment. She turned away, pretending to study the plates spinning in the microwave. He didn't need to know that the so-called bad moment repeated over and over, minute by minute, day by day, like a hellish version of Groundhog Day. He tipped his head, narrowing his eyes a shade. Will you be back at work starting Monday? I hate to pressure you, but the new product launch is around the corner. We need all hands on deck in the marketing department, even entry-level employees like you. The family business, Cabot Tea Company, had entered into a joint venture with King Cola to produce and distribute ready-to-drink iced tea. Hunter had pretty much gambled the family fortune on the venture. He'd been growing more intense by the day in an effort to ensure the launch's success. Although none of Gentry's low-level responsibilities would make or break it, she had to do her best. She'd only gone to work at CTC this year to ditch her black sheep status so that her son could be proud and have a real place among the Cabots. I thought the launch wasn't until October, she deadpanned. His brows rode up his forehead. What? Oh, for God's sake, Hunter. I'm joking. She snatched the plate from the microwave and grabbed a fork. He was lucky she was starving, or he'd have gotten an earful. I know the schedule. I've been on some calls with my mom and the team. Just not FaceTime or Skype, God forbid. The first too hot bite of shrimp burned the roof of her mouth, but hunger kept her chewing. She heard herself purring the kinds of sounds that, in another context, might come from the bedroom. Not that she could remember that feeling. Alex, the best chef ever. Colby would agree. Hunter smiled for the first time since he'd arrived. Gentry had taken her third bite when Sarah came into the kitchen with Colt, forehead creased with concern. I think he's a little warm. And this cough? Have you been to the doctor? Gentry loved Sarah, but thought her worry-wart reflex and preference to parent by the book added unnecessary stress to motherhood. Whenever Ty's adoption went through, the poor tyke's childhood would be a series of well-intentioned and warmly enforced rules and expectations, tutors, and lessons. Sarah probably Googled every boo-boo, too. Gentry didn't believe in all that. Rules had never helped her. Too many of them boxed a person in, and too many expectations resulted in dozens of ways to fail. She wanted Colt to be a free spirit, to explore without limitations, so he'd become a confident, interesting, outside-the-box kind of man. "I don't need a doctor. Colt's warm from crying all evening." She chomped another shrimp. Honestly, it tasted orgasmically good. Was that a word? Well, it should be. Note to self. Check Merriam-Webster. "His cough sounds wet, but I can't tell if he's wheezing. You know, preemies are more susceptible to respiratory illnesses like RSV. Maybe you should have him checked, just to be sure." Sarah patted Colt while swaying with him, cuddling him like a beloved, if squealing, teddy bear. Sarah often brought up the preemie thing, but Gentry hated labels. Colt had been born 3 weeks ahead of his due date without significant complications. End of story. "At 8:30 on a Friday night?" Gentry made a face. "The pediatrician's office is closed, Sarah." "What about pediatric urgent care?" Sarah suggested with a hopeful smile. "This isn't urgent. And look at me. I'm in no state to leave the house." Gentry ate the last shrimp with a bit of despair now that the plate was empty. If Hunter and Sarah would look away for 3 seconds, she could lick the plate. "Besides, the people in that waiting room are really sick. Why expose Colt to those germs when it isn't necessary?"
"Good point."
Hunter's surprised expression irked Gentry, as if her common sense were as rare as snow in Florida.
"What if I call Ian?"
Sarah kept Gentry locked in her sights, calm and determined, as usual. "He's in town, at a motel, actually. He can listen to Colt's lungs and make sure there isn't a problem." Ian, the humanitarian EMT Sarah had wanted to fix Gentry up with many moons ago, before Gentry had decided to keep her baby. The same EMT who'd arrived on the scene downtown less than 9 weeks ago, when Gentry's water had broken well ahead of schedule, and Sarah's flat tire had prevented them from heading to the hospital. How fitting that her second run-in with him might be as humiliating as the first. "Why is he at a motel?" Gentry wondered aloud. She recalled thinking him handsome, which said a lot, considering the Freddy Krueger-caliber labor pains stabbing her belly when they'd met. Not that it mattered. Handsome men weren't a priority. The last time she dived into that pool, her one-night stand in Napa, with a gorgeous man she knew only as Smith, she'd ended up with Colt. Now she hadn't the interest in or time for men, or, sadly, sex.
"Gloria said something about his fiancée breaking things off and him coming home to get his things."
Sarah had met Ian's mother, Gloria, because that woman ran the Angel House, a homeless shelter for women and children, where Sarah volunteered.
"It's possible he hasn't got the security deposit to rent someplace new."
"Why'd he bother with that when he could have had his things boxed and shipped?" Gentry conjured his unforgettable green eyes, wavy umber hair, a smattering of freckles across the bridge of his nose. A boy-next-door type, with a dash of sexy.
"Maybe he hoped to save his relationship."
Sarah kissed Colt and stroked his silky hair, clearly less interested in Ian's story than Gentry was.
"Let's see if he'll come take a listen."
Gentry shot Hunter a look. He shrugged, which meant he knew that Sarah wouldn't let up, and he wasn't going to argue.
"You're totally overreacting."
Gentry placed the back of her hand on Colt's forehead, which did feel a little warm. Not scary hot or anything. She rummaged through the kitchen drawer stuffed with 1,001 infant gizmos.
When she located the baby thermometer, she held it up and almost cried, "Eureka!" Instead, she stuck it in Colt's ear until it beeped. 99.6. Nothing a little baby Tylenol can't handle. That won't help his lungs. Wouldn't you rather be safe than sorry? Sarah shrugged a shoulder. A quiet stare down ensued for 4 seconds, maybe 5. Fiddle flippin' sticks. Fine, call Ian. Hopefully the guy would laugh and Sarah would back down. Gentry reached for her son. Once she had him in her arms, she said, "Excuse me." While Sarah called Ian and conferred with Hunter, Gentry took Colt to the bathroom and dabbed a cool washcloth across his forehead. She checked his writhing body for a rash, but found none. Clearish fluid, not green gunk, ran from his nose. Sarah's concern niggled, even though Gentry seriously doubted the need to call in reinforcements. While she changed Colt's diaper, she was struck by his absolute dependence on her judgment, his utter trust in her. Her poor son. If he could speak, she'd know what he needed. Instead, she remained stymied, trying to decipher one cry from another, trying to determine if his head, ears, or belly caused the ache that kept him crying. What? 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 She lifted him and swayed, humming softly in a fruitless attempt to comfort them both. In all honesty, at any second, she could fall apart or asleep, a real toss-up. In the privacy of the bathroom, she closed her eyes while clinging to her child. It's us against the world, baby. Either God took pity on her, or Colt had finally worn himself out, because his crying subsided to a dull kind of whine. Gentry inhaled deeply and rolled her shoulders back. By the time she returned to the living room, Ian was knocking on the door. An inadvertent glance in the mirror set off a whole new shockwave of horror. Who was that anxious, depleted soul staring back at her? No wonder Hunter and Sarah had been stunned into silence when they'd first arrived. Gentry closed her eyes again, momentarily imagining herself in normal clothes. Gautier, perhaps. Trendy, high-heeled shoes that drew attention to her long legs and ankle tattoo. A multitude of bracelets on her arm. Her auburn hair, artfully woven in a waterfall braid. The image of her old self enabled her to tip up her chin and pretend spit-up didn't coat her robe. She opened her eyes just as Sarah escorted Ian inside. At least her messy apartment would still look like a palace compared with the disaster zones he'd navigated. Ian hadn't known what to make of Sarah's call. They'd only spoken on a few brief occasions, but his mother held her in high regard. He remembered their first encounter when she'd been hurt by a resident's abusive husband who'd barged into the Angel House in search of his wife. Once Ian had made sure neither woman was hurt, Sarah had shifted to the role of matchmaker, pimping the very sister-in-law who now needed help. The same one he'd met months ago when she'd unexpectedly gone into labor. He suspected part of Sarah's current agenda once again involved playing Cupid. Otherwise, they could have taken the infant to an urgent care facility. Whether or not Gentry was a co-conspirator had yet to be determined. He stepped inside the swanky, newly constructed unit with its picture-perfect views framed by massive plate-glass windows. This joint probably cost upwards of $1 million. Like a reflex, his mind immediately calculated other uses for that money. Medicine, water, clothes, food, or a donation to the EMT training facility he was founding in Haiti, in his father's name, with the help of his dad's old friend, Dr. Archer Cook. "Thank you for coming out of your way tonight." Sarah led him into the living room. She gestured to the imposing man on her left. "This is my husband, Hunter, and his sister, Gentry, whom you might remember. And that little bundle is Colt." Ian shook Hunter's hand, reminding himself not to nitpick. Sarah volunteered at the shelter, and the Cabot family had started a foundation that supported a number of community outreach programs. If they also thought monogrammed dress shirts and gold watches were important, who was he to judge? "Nice to meet you." He then turned to Gentry, who didn't look particularly grateful to see him, despite the polite smile on her face. She sure hadn't primped for his arrival, he thought, holding back a wry smile. Clearly, she was no more interested in Sarah's matchmaking than he was. Good. Ian had zero interest in being fixed up with any woman so soon after his breakup with Farah. His disinterest went doubly so with respect to an heiress to the Cabot tea fortune who'd likely drive him up the wall with her oblivious, privileged complaints. "Sorry, I asked Sarah not to bother you." Despite the circles under her eyes, the ratty ponytail, and bathrobe in need of a serious washing, Gentry Cabot was tall and proud, with striking green eyes and a naturally flirtatious smile. Even her grimy robe didn't hamper a sudden tug of attraction, an untimely and unwelcome response, leaving him strangely thunderstruck. "It's fine. I wasn't busy." "Well, now that you're here, these two can go home with a clear conscience." Gentry's pointed look and quick nod toward the door left no doubt about her dismissal. In less than 5 minutes and 25 words, she seemed like a modern-day Scarlett O'Hara, but hopefully not that manipulative. She patted her brother's cheek. "Thanks for bringing me dinner, but I think we've got this little situation under control." "But," Sarah began, "I promise I'll call you with a full report. I'll even type it up and highlight the bullet points, if that makes you feel better." Gentry affected a playful smirk. "Oh, yeah." Her sarcasm confirmed his quick assessment. "Smartass." Hunter kissed his sister's forehead. With a final scan of her unkempt apartment and Ian's emergency bag, he said, "Come on, Sarah. Let's go before we get cooties and end up getting Ty sick." Sarah stroked Colt's head and drew a deep inhalation of his baby scent before kissing his face. "Okay. Thanks again, Ian." She glanced around the disaster area that was Gentry's living room, her nose wrinkling with empathy. "Gentry, I'll check in tomorrow." Hunter spun her toward the door before she'd find an excuse to stay. As they left, he waved at Ian. "Nice to meet you."
"Same."
Ian nodded, curious about the whiff of tension between Gentry and the others. Gentry closed the door and faced him, shrugging a bit too nonchalantly. "Well, what next?" Some might admire her tough girl routine, but he'd seen enough genuine metal up close, often enough to know the difference. Natalia, in Macau, Colombia, who'd lost a child in a massive mudslide, but soldiered on to care for her others. Children like Macon Lee, Lees, and Risho, who were students at Marie Ormont's school in Haiti, and remained curious despite a lack of adequate food, resources, or water. Those traits proved real strength. Lucky for her, Gentry Cabot's strength would probably never be tested. Ian reached for the child.
Why don't I take a listen? Sarah mentioned a concern about wheezing.
Gentry carefully handed her son to him. For a moment, her guarded expression softened, eyes shining with a mother's devotion.
I'm sure this isn't necessary, but if I didn't let Sarah call you, she wouldn't have slept all night from worry.
That might be true, but he suspected Gentry wouldn't mind reassurance either.
It's not an inconvenience.
Taking 15 minutes out of his life to do a stranger a favor took about as much thought as breathing.
We took his temperature 10 minutes ago, 99.6.
Gentry hovered over his shoulder as he laid the baby on the suede sofa and pulled out a stethoscope. Gentry's pinched brow and drawn mouth didn't look all that different from that of other young mothers he'd witnessed in field work. He supposed a mother's worry transcended race and socioeconomic status. Ian's thoughts then flitted to the acceptance he'd seen in other parents' eyes when illness and food shortages wreaked havoc on their lives. Those memories made it tough to consider everyday problems as being grave. But life experience shaped perspective, and Gentry's sheltered existence didn't make her motherhood worries less troubling to her than anyone else's were to them.
"Has he thrown up or had excessive diarrhea?" Ian asked. He listened to Colt's rapid heartbeat, which he could barely hear thanks to the baby's fussing.
"No."
"Any rashes?"
He cast a quick look at her.
"No."
Gentry brushed her hand across her scalp and stroked her ponytail.
"Honestly, he's been colicky since that first week. He gets all fired up, and nothing calms him down. Even those drops I read about don't do shit. Squat. Sorry."
She flicked her hand in a way that suggested she wasn't very sorry.
"Curse away. It's your place."
He offered a smile meant to comfort, but she started chewing on her thumbnail. From the looks of things, Gentry had no help around the house. She didn't wear a ring on her left hand either, so her baby's dad might not be overly involved.
He knew a little something about the hardship faced by a single mom.
Although his parents had been married, his father had traveled the world, saving others, leaving Ian's mother alone to raise him for long stretches of time.
"Does he have reflux?"
"Not that I know of," she frowned. "The doctor's never tested for it or anything. Is that even something an 8-week-old can get?"
"It's possible."
She continued biting her nails. Ian examined Colt's chest and watched him breathe, seeing no overt signs of respiratory distress, no sucking in under the ribs, no blue-tinted skin. Still, Sarah had mentioned Colt's preemie status, and Ian knew enough to know that, with infants, things could change quickly. The other thing he knew, Gentry wasn't as calm and collected as she wanted to appear. Few new mothers were, and this one looked like she'd barely survived a zombie apocalypse. Dealing with an infant, let alone a colicky one, was challenging. An unexpected swell of empathy arose, softening the edges of his harsh opinions.
"Nothing setting off alarms, but there's a slight chest rattle you should monitor tonight."
She closed her eyes and tucked her chin.
"So, Sarah was right?"
He watched her defeated expression pinch with worry, even as she stifled a yawn. Without rest, she'd end up sick too.
"You look like you could use a little break. Go lie down for a bit. I'll keep an eye on Colt.
Why would you do that?
Just like that, her guard went back up.
Because that's what I do.
From the time he could walk, his mom and dad had taught him how to read a situation and offer assistance. Any time he thought of his dad, who died trying to save others, his heart washed in a mix of pride and sorrow.
Sarah says that about you. She thinks you're a superhero.
Gentry narrowed her eyes a tad, hip already cocked.
I don't believe in superheroes.
The hint of coyness in her husky voice affected him in a primal way he couldn't escape.
I'm no superhero. Perhaps Prince Charming, though.
Her lips quirked. Her eyes glittered with humor. Tickling her funny bone made him feel something. Something better than he'd felt these past couple of days while he'd been trying to regroup. Something he didn't quite understand.
Since Sarah vouches for you, I guess I can trust you.
An Eagle Scout at your service.
When he lifted Colt up to his chest, Gentry's cocky expression slipped.
You can trust me.
She came close enough that he could feel her warmth. She kissed Colt's head and then looked Ian in the eye.
I'll take a quick shower and maybe rest for 15 minutes.
Take your time.
She wandered toward the hallway. Before she disappeared around the corner, she stopped, hand on the wall, and turned toward him. Despite her dirty robe and unwashed hair, her posture and bearing rivaled any princess.
Thank you,
he nodded. 30 minutes later, with Gentry's catnap having turned into a deep slumber, Ian had found the formula and bottles, which hadn't been difficult because they were sitting out on the counter, along with almost everything else. He fed the boy, burped him, and changed his diaper. When the kid wouldn't keep still against his chest, Ian strolled onto the deck, hoping a change of temperature and scenery might do some good. Even in June, nighttime temperatures around Lake Sandy often dipped into the 50s. Tonight was no exception. A gentle breeze seemed to catch Colt by surprise, causing him to go still and stop whining. Surrounded by the music of a thousand crickets, Ian swayed back and forth like a human cradle as he looked down the hill toward the lake. The murky blue light from the half-moon cast the forested slope in animated shadows. Leafy trees murmured in the summer wind, calming the infant, who seemed to be burrowing into Ian's soft chambray shirt. The million-dollar view had to be beautiful in daylight, but Ian preferred the peacefulness of nighttime. He didn't get much peace and quiet in Haiti, where he spent the majority of his time this past year, training others for disaster preparedness, and, more recently, working with Archer, Stanley Delbo, and San Michele Hospital administrators to structure their venture. There, he spent muggy nights huddled in a net-covered bed, listening to the tinny buzz of mosquitoes and the eerie beat of the distant drumming from mysterious off-limits voodoo ceremonies. Those things might have made sleep impossible if it hadn't been for the effects of overwhelming exhaustion. Here in Oregon, he never experienced that bone-deep kind of tired, which wasn't a surprise. If anything, whenever stateside, he felt a bit twitchy, like he knew he had someplace more important to be. Someplace where he had a million chances to improve others' lives and carry out his father's mission. His father's legacy called to him on a constant basis. And when he was out there serving others, his nightmare, The memory of the last time he'd seen his father, when he lost him in the aftermath of the Haitian earthquake, always subsided. Farah had never forgotten that. She'd pretended to in the beginning, but she'd grown tired of being alone so often, impatient to begin the future and family she wanted. Now that Ian was single again, he could fully commit to memorializing the man who'd meant everything to him, without guilt. Somewhere beneath the deck, he heard a wild animal foraging. A raccoon, perhaps. He realized then that Colt had actually fallen asleep against his chest. He opened the door and stepped back inside. Guessing that the baby's bassinet was in Gentry's room, he settled Colt in the playpen set up in the space between the living and dining rooms. Had the slight rattle he'd heard earlier been temporarily relieved by the cold air? He gently touched the back of his hand to Colt's head. Still warm, despite having just been outside. He frowned and looked over his shoulder toward Gentry's bedroom. She was bushed. He should let her sleep. With nothing better to do, he began folding the various blankets and stacking the photographs of Colt and empty frames scattered across the massive glass dining table. A little unexpected help went a long way toward lightening the load for people under stress. Although this Lake Sandy condo was far from a true disaster zone, he had no doubt that Gentry Cabot was in over her head. Chapter 2. Baffling. According to Merriam-Webster, extremely confusing or difficult to understand. According to me, Ian Crawford. Gentry bolted upright in her bed and gasped as if she'd broken through Lake Sandy's surface in search of oxygen. The red numbers of the digital clock read 5:36. 8+ hours of uninterrupted sleep. What the hell had happened to Colt? She tossed the covers aside and bounded to his bassinet. Empty. Without another thought, she ran, bare feet chilled by the cold walnut floors, to the living room, then stopped short. Was it possible to be disoriented and confused because of more sleep? She shook her head to wake herself up. The barest light in the sky came through the huge windows, giving her a clear view of the space. The clean space. Blankets neatly folded beside the sofa, half-empty bottles removed, playthings tucked away behind an oversized chair, the aroma of freshly brewed coffee wafting through the air. Wait, what? The hairs on her arms tingled all at once as she became aware of someone's presence. She spun slowly to her left, breath held, as if she'd been dropped into a bizarre dream. One that smelled good. Ian stood in her kitchen. Her spotless kitchen, pouring himself a cup of coffee. Rumpled shirt and hair, sleepy eyes. The early morning moment thrust an unexpected intimacy upon them, even as she tried to process the fact that he'd stayed the night. In a tone that barely rose above a whisper, he said, "Good morning." He wouldn't quite look at her, though. An odd duck, that one. No judgment there. She'd always liked odd ducks, being one herself. "Where's my son?" The muscles in her neck tightened with impatience and a touch of panic. He held his index finger to his lips to remind her to keep quiet. "Sleeping," he said, pointing toward the playpen. She tiptoed into the living room and peeked into the pack-and-play, where her cherub lay on his back, eyes closed. Although she heard a slight hiss with each breath, He looked so angelic. Her heart swelled from the rush of love filling it like a water balloon. She leaned over the railing, almost brushing his velvety cheek with her fingers, but caught herself before accidentally waking him. Her heart rate slowed just enough for her thoughts to settle. The quiet moment in her newly cleaned condo, an unbelievable luxury, prompted the urge to yawn and stretch. Another incredible extravagance. Her entire body felt nimble, thanks to the much-needed rest. Only after she scratched her side did she realize she'd raced out of her bedroom wearing nothing but a silky tank top and underpants. Super skimpy ones. She tried to glance down at her chest without moving her head. It took about a half a second to see clear evidence of the morning chill in the air. If the coffee hadn't awakened Ian, her headlights and tattoos probably had. Gentry wasn't falsely modest. Most of the time, she would happily preen half-naked in front of a guy. She admitted, without shame, that she liked turning them on, too. But in this case, she hadn't meant to shock or seduce Ian. The fact that he might think she had embarrassed her, which was sort of remarkable in itself. Not that she'd let him know. She strolled into the kitchen, head held high, gaze direct. Prince Charming and a fairy godmother, rarer than a purple unicorn. Huh? He scratched the back of his neck and then pretended to find something interesting to stare at in his coffee mug. Most men she'd known would ogle her and then proposition her. Not this one. Ian's eyes darted all around the kitchen in a chivalrous attempt not to stare at her boobs. How endearing. Thank you, she waved around the kitchen, for all this, for cleaning and, it seems, taking care of my son all night. You're welcome. He looked into her eyes again, but not before his gaze dipped, for an instant, to her chest. Finally, he gave up and gestured up and down with his hand. Maybe you want to put a robe on? If that makes you more comfortable. She shrugged and turned away, only releasing a relieved sigh and breaking into a trot once he couldn't see her. After pulling on a pair of pajama pants and a t-shirt, she returned. I didn't mean to fall asleep and stick you with cold all night. I know. He set his empty mug in the sink. It's fine. It seemed like you could use the help. Great. Now he, like everyone else, thought her inept. She imagined his running internal commentary all night. Didn't take her kid to the doctor? Check. Messy house? Check. Abandoned her son for a few hours' sleep? Check. Before she could form a reply, he said, My mom was sort of a single mom for long stretches, so I know how hard it can be. Oh. Better. So much so that if she were a different kind of woman, she might have become teary from that validation, however inflated it might be. Gentry cleared her throat, teetering like a paddleboarder on rough water. Well, can I tell Sarah she inconvenienced you for nothing? He rubbed his jaw before crossing his arms. I wouldn't call it an emergency, but you should probably take him to the doctor. There's still a slight rattle in his chest, and his temperature is still elevated. Shoot. She glanced over her shoulder. Is it serious? I wouldn't ignore it and give it a chance to become a bigger problem. I'd plan to put him in daycare starting tomorrow. She said it aloud, talking to herself more than to him. Hunter and her mom probably anticipated a last-minute excuse for pushing back her start day at work. she'd hate to prove them right.
That said, she hadn't fully reconciled returning to work when she herself had resented being raised by nannies. At the same time, she wanted to be a good role model of ambition and goal setting for Colt. Although a corporate career required her to subdue herself for 8 hours a day, it also regularly involved her with her family, a real first for her, and a must for Colt's sake.
"Well, I'll get out of your hair."
Ian scrubbed his face while yawning.
"Wait," Gentry exclaimed without thinking. Speaking with an adult in the morning, especially one with kind eyes and a broad chest, had been a pleasurable change of pace.
"Can I make you breakfast?"
"No need. I gotta go," he grinned.
As if he had to be somewhere important by 6 o'clock in the morning. She supposed he was sick of babysitting, or likely needed to catch up on some sleep. Her sofa's sleek style kicked ass, but it wouldn't make for the most comfortable mattress for someone his height.
"Okay, can I pay you something for everything you did? I hear the going rate for sitters is like $20 an hour, and you cleaned."
"No, thanks. I'm good."
His frowny-faced response made her feel stupid. She hadn't meant to insult him, but she didn't want to be a leech either.
"Sorry, I just..." "A full night's sleep was an amazing gift. I feel so good I might finally get around to framing my photos today. I don't know how to repay you, but let me try."
Tit for tat, give and take. She didn't like owing a debt. A little sparkle lit his eye.
"Well, I did see you in your undies. How about we call it even?"
Her cheeks got hot. Flustering people was her job, not the other way around. She wasn't sure if she liked being taunted, although her tummy fluttered in a not-so-unpleasant way. That made her more embarrassed. Since when had she become so hard up for attention?
"Wait a sec. Now I think you got the better end of the deal."
Ego solved by a quick comeback. "Good. Balance restored."
"It's possible."
He smiled fully for the first time since they'd met. He had nice lips and exactly the right amount of scruff around his jaw. Maybe even the start of a dimple on his left cheek. His sage green eyes had an old soul quality. She doubted that the sun at her back caused her intense warmth. Then Colt woke with a start, and the sudden spark between Ian and her fizzled.
"That's my cue," Ian sighed.
She recognized that tired sigh because her son, while adorable, wore everyone out. A lot like his mother.
"Chicken," she smirked, desperately wishing for another option.
Ian intrigued her, and that never happened. She wished he'd hang out for longer than 10 minutes. But she'd better get used to life as a single mom, because the number of men who'd line up to date her in her present circumstances would be about zero. She turned to lift Colt out of the playpen and kissed his head and cheeks.
"Good morning, Bugaboo. Are we going to have a nice day today? Mommy wants to go for a walk by the lake. Will you be a good boy in the stroller? No crying, please. Pretty, please?"
She rubbed her nose against his belly and reveled in his gurgling coos. Ian had made his way to the entry, but had stopped to watch her. Taking hold of Colt's little arm, she waved it.
"Say bye-bye to Ian. Bye-bye."
Ian nodded, and then, without another word, walked out the door.
Bye-bye.
The condo dimmed in his absence.
She could feel sorry for herself, or she could leave a message with the pediatrician to schedule an appointment. Resigned to her fate, she went to the kitchen to fix Colt a bottle, left a message with the doctor, then changed Colt's diaper, and prayed she could get a little morning walk in before he started fussing. On her way out the door, her mother called. Gentry answered mostly to prevent an uninvited drop-in.
Hi, Mom.
Good morning. The surprise in her mother's voice was no doubt intended to make Gentry feel bad for not having returned her recent call. In truth, Gentry couldn't take any more of her mom's parenting advice. Her mom, who'd been ghost-like during Gentry's childhood, suddenly thought herself an expert on mothering. It took every ounce of Gentry's patience, which, granted, wasn't much to begin with, to keep the sarcasm from her voice. Nasty barbs had been their preferred mode of communication for most of their relationship. But since becoming a mother herself, Gentry was trying to be more mature, even if it killed her.
I'm literally on my way out the door with Colt.
Why don't you swing by the house? Your father and I would love to see the little button. And you, of course.
Of course. We'll see. I'm waiting to hear from the doctor's office. Colt's got a bit of a cold, and I want to take him in to get checked.
Is it serious? Genuine concern colored her tone.
I can't tell. That's why I want to go.
If he's sick, you can't put him in daycare tomorrow, her mom clucked. I wish you had gotten a nanny like I suggested. Gentry closed her eyes and drew a deep breath. 1, 2, 3, release.
Miss Linda's will be like a home away from home. I want him to be with other kids, not alone most of the day.
She'd specifically picked Miss Linda's for its intimate in-home setting.
He's an infant, Gentry. It sounded as if her mother had rolled her eyes when she said that. A fussy one. He'll be in a crib all day.
Gentry shook her head, even though no one but Colt would see her.
So, like I said, I'm on my way out. I'll call you after the doctor appointment and let you know if I'll be at work tomorrow.
Another reason to hire a nanny. Kids get sick often. You won't get ahead if you call out all the time. You need someone at home to manage Colt so you can earn everyone's respect at work.
At least this time she hadn't added a quip about Smith.
Gorgeous, charming, half-drunk Smith.
To be fair, Gentry had been pretty drunk, too.
Thinking of him always made her stop for a second. Who and where was he? And would he want to know about his son?
Was he a good guy who deserved to know Colt?
Should she try to find him to give her son more family? Naturally, she never voiced those thoughts to a soul, let alone her mother.
I'll manage my son fine, thanks. Tell Dad hi.
Gentry pressed end and tossed her phone in the back of the stroller. Nothing got under her skin and drove up her spine faster than her mother's unsolicited advice. The worst part, though, her mom wasn't exactly wrong. A nanny who could also help around the house, like Ian had, would certainly make Gentry's life a little easier. But she felt sure Colt would be happier in the long run with the other kids at Miss Linda's. Whatever brief respite her morning had offered, every cell in her body now buzzed with negative energy. She adjusted her Lululemon cropped pants and neon jog bra, then fastened Colt into the stroller. He, however, had reached the limit of his ability to be awake without fussing and began to wriggle and cry when she adjusted the buckles. For what she'd spent on this contraption, it should be able to buckle her son in on its own, and solve her other problems, too. She didn't know if her anxiety caused Colt's cycle of tears, or if, like her, he naturally rebelled against being told what to do. Either way, she was screwed.